Now, here's a topic that we've touched on from time to time in the past, and there's a new initiative. Survivors of mother and baby homes where children were forcibly put up for adoption are calling for an All-Ireland body to help reunite families. The group known as Birth Mothers and Their Children for Justice NI is warning that mothers and children are continuing to die before they're getting the chance to meet. Let me speak to one of the organisers, Eunan Duffy. Eunan, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Eunan, tell us your story, because there's some happiness in your story, but it comes from a harrowing backdrop.
Well, basically, I found out that I was adopted early last year. Went to trace my birth mother, found her in August of last year, and I've had a relationship since. But it's the circumstances and situation around the tracing of loved ones, which is of major concern to all the victims and survivors that we represent, basically.
So you were lucky enough to be able to trace your birth mother, and you're interacting with her now?
I am, yes. Yes, on a regular basis, yes. Unfortunately, not everybody's scenario and outcomes would have such a positive outcome, because many people, of course, don't end up tracing their birth mother, and for some it's... it's too late, because a lot of these women have passed on. So, and then you also have the scenarios where the birth mothers, because of the duress, coercion, and the influence of the religious institutions in particular, you know, and the stigma attached to them when they left all the various types of institutions, that they were basically told to go forward in life, not mention their experience to anyone, because they were basically frowned upon as women that got pregnant out of wedlock, etc.
Did your mum go through that experience? Did she tell you about you being taken from her?
Yes, that was one of the first questions, obviously, I asked. And she confirmed that I was forcibly taken off her, only seeing her for a matter of seconds. Then the religious order that she was under the care of took me away, and she never laid eyes on me again. Obviously, it was up to me, because birth mothers, you see, the situation is, Frank, that when they sign these consent forms under whatever circumstances, whether it be in supposed informed consent, there's issues around that. But when children like myself are taken off these birth mothers, obviously there's many issues and consequences, ramifications of the circumstances under which that happened, and the sentence, you know, because these women were put under severe pressure. In many cases, when women went into these institutions, from the DNR, they walked into these places, they were brought under immense pressure, and in fact told that when you eventually have your baby, it'll be adopted out, or whatever the case may be, you know.
That's about 50 years ago, obviously, in your case, Eunan. It's sad to think that society was so cruel then, and it's so cruel, certainly in my lifetime. And I look back on it, I think of all those mothers who gave birth, who were having their baby taken from them. And I don't mean to in any way to sound as if I'm lacking compassion in my next comment, but it sounds a bit brutal, but it's exactly how I see it. You were taken from your mother the way a young calf would be taken from an animal. It's so unacceptable that human beings were doing that to other human beings.
Well, your analogy, when you're talking about animals here, at the end of the day, if you talk about the inhumane treatment of these people and the way that babies were forcibly and illegally taken from these mothers, at the end of the day, there's no bigger cruelty as far as we're concerned. You know, unimaginable grief on behalf of the adopted child and the birth mother, and that basically needs to be diagnosed. You know, the whole point and the crux of the matter is that whether the women blatantly and deliberately were forced to give up their children and were given no choice, or if they were made to believe that they had a choice but felt they had no other options, or whether they felt they had options but were not given accurate and truthful information regarding the long-term ramifications of the relinquishment of their child. So this is for them and their child at the end of the day. So basically what we say is, if it wasn't for the so-called happy adoption seduction dance of coercion and duress, then these families would still be together. And people like to consign these issues to the historical dustbin. But Frank, these are ongoing live issues. The historic abuse, it doesn't relate to these people because it's ongoing abuse. And the social services system, the fact that we have an inactive political vacuum at the minute certainly doesn't help, because as you said at the start of the programme there, women and their children, because you're talking about anybody here from basically their 30s upwards, are have already passed away and will continue to die unless these matters and issues are all addressed as soon as possible. There's so much time sensitivity here. Time is of the essence. I was told when I was tracing my birth mother, oh, be patient, you know, take your time. This needs to be done, that needs to be done. We have to follow procedures and processes and all. Well, that's not the case. When you are unaware of the circumstances of the person you're looking for, whether it's a child or a birth mother, you don't know what the scenario is down the line. That person could potentially already dead. That person could have a life-limiting disability. They could have a terminal disease. You don't know what you're going to be facing down the line. You're also facing the possibility, and you have to resign yourself to the fact that there's different scenarios involved here, where you might make contact, for example, with a birth mother. In many cases, they will reject you. Nothing is black and white about this, because these women, at the end of the day, were put under untold pressure at the times when they were giving up their children. Not giving up their children, because the children were taken off them in the vast majority of cases. But you're faced with a scenario of these women going forward in their own lives and not telling future partners and husbands and other children about their past experiences. So these women have this daily dilemma, still suffer in silence, many in secret, and haven't told future family relatives about their past experiences. So when an adopted child comes knocking on the door, through a third party, obviously, because there has to be an intermediary here, then you don't know what that person's mentality is going to be and their attitude towards the knowledge that someone has came looking for them and wants to try and re-establish contact.
Absolutely. The mother has been a victim the whole way through her life in these situations.
The mother and the child, yes, are both victims. And that's what we're saying. That grief needs to be diagnosed. You know, the Guardian done a newspaper article back in 2009, and it was about the amount of child adoptees that were coming forward and trying to trace their birth parents through social media. Now, that shows you the desperation. Now, there's many, many issues here we're talking about. The South are facing these issues now in regards to the new adoption bill that they're trying to bring forward. And everything seems to be about protecting the identity of the birth mother. But, you know, although that has to be taken into consideration here, the birth mother's privacy and their identity and their rights, etc., you also have to take into account the child's identity and their history and them striving to find out what their identity is. You know, these are very, very complicated issues at the end of the day. And so certainly, if I could just say, Frank, that the current system is wholly unacceptable. I went through that system last year, and basically, you're put through a post-adoption counselling system, which isn't the counselling that we think of in terms of therapy. This is basically counselling. You find out you're adopted, we'll bring you in, try and get some information for you, and send you on your way with very little help. And I was basically ignored, and as many people are. And you're told that you're going to get information within a certain amount of time, and that doesn't materialise. I was told social services and court services records would be coming within a few weeks, and it was 6 months before they got them. Now, that certainly doesn't help anybody, any individual that's trying to trace loved ones. As I said, the social services were pointed to the two voluntary agencies, which are AdoptDNA and Family Cure. Family Cure is a slightly different. You see, there's also a postcode lottery in the north where it depends on where you live and what trust you're going to be assigned to, and that will near enough dictate the type of service you get. In some areas, it's better than others. But you have a case where social services counsellors are bringing you in to give you your information, and one of the first questions they ask you, even when you want your information, is, why do you want this information? Now, nobody should be put under that kind of interrogation. It should be, you know, a well-known fact. It's natural. It's a natural entitlement. It's a human right that you should ask for any information pertaining to your own history and your own identity and that of the person you love that, you know, you're trying to find.
Yeah, and I couldn't argue with a word that you're saying. And back in that era, society, the state, the church, they were cruel. They were absolutely cruel. I go as far as to say they were bordering on being evil in the way that they treated the likes of your mother and you as a child, and all the other mothers and all the other children who were separated at the time of birth, and the child being forced into very often, yes, loving adoptive families. I'm not suggesting for a moment that every child that was adopted or every child that went overseas ended up being disadvantaged completely, but you're absolutely disadvantaged if you're taken away from your birth mother when you do not need to be taken from your birth mother. So how can your project now reunite as many as possible, bring some happiness to what must have been the starkest of lives, especially to those mothers who are fully aware of it the whole way through their lives, and to the children who became aware of it as you did just a year ago?
Well, we're a pain. At the end of the day, you know, Frank, it's very, very hard for an organisation like us that are trying to get somewhere in terms of the campaign that we have, which is not just about reuniting all the families that we're talking about here, but also the wider issues of calling for a public inquiry or commission, whatever the case may be, into the mother and baby homes, the Magdalene laundries, the Reform Industrials Group. You know, there's so many institutions here that need investigated from top to bottom. And, of course, because of the system the way it is, we cannot, you know, we've made submissions and representations to the politicians, obviously, and they've passed it on to, for example, the Ministry of Health, you know, saying, listen, these people need help. You need to, you know, introduce a fully comprehensive and time-sensitive operation whereby people can go and get this tracing done. You know, it's unacceptable for one person to be working part-time for two voluntary agencies and the five trusts when they're trying to get family tracing done. And those agencies are limited as to the tracing they can do. You brought up the fact that the overseas aspect here, so many children and the birth mothers left Ireland to seek other pastures. The children themselves were obviously forcibly taken and adopted out. And yes, you're entirely right when you're saying that many of these children went to extremely loving families, and a lot of them had good lives. But that doesn't change the fact or excuse the fact that these people were forcibly adopted and illegally adopted. And you have people, high profile, well publicized figures in the community. You're talking about GPs, you're talking about solicitors, you're talking about all sorts of people that are in this up to their neck. You're talking about state complicity, you're talking about the religious institutions, you're talking about charitable organizations like Barnardo's and the Salvation Army that ran these particular homes, not just for pregnant mothers. People have to remember that it wasn't just pregnant mums that went into those institutions. It was disabled women. It was women that had committed, you know, minor juvenile crimes because there was police referrals. And the religious orders in particular will put out the fact that these women went into these homes voluntarily. Now, that's just completely untrue. To say that's economical with truth would be an overstatement, because a lot of these women tried their best on a regular basis to escape these institutions. And whenever they did, the first people that the religious institutions, etc., called was the police. Now, you're talking about issues here of involuntary detention, forced labour. You're talking about sleep deprivation, food deprivation. You're talking about babies being deliberately neglected and left to die as they didn't make good adoptions. You're talking about women that were heavily pregnant and had to get down on their hands and knees and do all sorts of manual chores in laundries or whatever the case may be. You know, you're talking about so many contraventions and breaches of UN resolutions and treaties here, not just by the organisations themselves, but the states. You know, the states need to stand up and, you know, put their head above the parapet and say, listen, what happened was wrong. For a lot of people now that's living, it wasn't on their watch. A lot of them weren't members of the government, etc. But that's no excuse. We need to look back here and we need to correct the wrongs of the past. And we don't, at the end of the day, this is indiscriminate. This doesn't belong to any particular creed. You know, we try to make it known, and we urge everybody to let them know at the end of the day that this was a cross-community issue. This was done in an indiscriminate basis. It didn't matter what the creed or colour was of anyone here. The Protestant churches ran these institutions as well. You know, the mass graves, the babies have turned up in Protestant institutions in the south, for example, the Bethany Home. You know, the health service executive in the south has torn up mass amount of material in terms of the falsification and the alteration of documents that said that women and children died or they moved out of these homes when they didn't. And of course, we need a North-South cooperational body set up as quickly as possible to look into the human trafficking that went on, not just between these two states of North and South and the imaginary border, but we're talking about, you know, the mass human trafficking that went on to other countries in the UK, and you're talking about Canada and America.
Ewan, it's stark and it's heartbreaking listening to you. It really is. I'm out of time on it for this morning, but I have to say it is almost impossible to argue with anything that you are saying. I really appreciate you raising it, and thanks for coming on. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity, Frank. Thank you.
Ewan Duffy there, campaigning, understandably campaigning. If you have a story to tell us, if you were in any of those institutions and you have something good to say about them, we're happy to hear from you as well. But I cannot, under any circumstances, understand why people were treated like those women and those children were treated.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.